Good morning. Welcome. My name is Barbara Howell, and I am the board representative today. We have a variety of announcements this morning, of which I'm going to have the high school students start. So if the high school students would please come down for their announcements.
Darn it. It's the weekend after Valentine's Day. I'm all dressed up. My significant other's in the car, and I have nowhere to take them.
Well, we have a Valentine's Day dinner going on tonight.
Huh. Well, the food's all probably bland and tasteless.
Actually, it's home-cooked fancy food made by your high school youth group.
Well, it's probably all boring and not entertaining at all.
We have some really talented singers and music players going up, and we also have a romantic playlist that's going to be going on during the dinner.
You're probably all inexperienced and don't know how to actually do it.
We did it last year, and it was a really big success, and you can ask people who went last year about it.
Well, it's probably really expensive then.
It's $4 for couples, and we have only a few spaces left because we had a lot of people sign up for the auction.
Well, then I better check it out.
All right, performance number two, Betsy Floss Kimball.
It's hard to follow that. Mine's not going to be as dramatic. But please join us in Classroom 1 at 11:45 for continuing the conversation with Common Ground community organizer Rusty Borkin. We'll be discussing the most frequent issues that have arisen in his several hundred one-on-ones that he's done with people in suburban areas. So we're going to be starting to focus and get to work, and so we will want to know what's important to you and what affects you. So please join us.
And Al, do you want to do a performance, or would you like me just to make the announcement? On February 3rd, we will be having the new membership ceremony, so if you have been considering joining and would like to be part of that, please talk to Al or Chris White after the service today. And I have one more announcement, and it's going to be performed by John Kuhn of the Ministerial Search Committee.
No performance here, but just want to draw your attention to the flyer in the back of on the back of the flyer in the order of service. And there's going to be a categorical thinking workshop after church next Sunday that we're encouraging everybody to attend. And although this program is focused on not having bias in our choice of minister in the search, election that you'll be doing this spring, it's also just a good opportunity for some thoughtful introspection of our own prejudices that we might have as we interact with, you know, people around us. So hope to see you there, and thank you.
And for our last vocalized announcement, there are other announcements, and this week's happening in your order of service, but many of you by now might have received the flyer announcing the stewardship campaign. And this is real, folks. We just had John talk. We are calling a full-time minister, so please, we're not a charity. This is your life. You chose to be here with us, and this is what we want. So please read the materials, reflect on what you can do, and give generously. Now, before we go any further, we're going to segregate. If you have the flu, please go sit over in this section. Okay, all right. I now invite you to greet those sitting around you.
Thank you.
you're visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. We invite you to sign the guest ledger at the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any additional questions about our church or Unitarian Universalism, as well as Chris White and Al Haskell of our membership committee. If you are visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story of all ages, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go to observe in your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway to if there is need for childcare during the service. Classes for the RE program end around 11:15, so you can pick your children up at that time or they'll meet you in the social hall. We always enjoy getting to know our guests, so if any members have brought guests and would like to introduce them, or if any guests have brought themselves and would like to introduce yourselves, please do so. We enjoy getting to know you. Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Please put your cell phones on silence during the service, and I hope you find this morning's service transitional for you. And our speaker today is Howard Bowman, who is a friend of LCUUC, I can say that, and he has taught philosophy at Mount Mary College in Marion University. He is a retired UCC clergyman. He led the class Civil Conversations, which was Curing the Heart of Democracy series with us, and quite a few of us took that class in the fall. And he also is an avid fly fisherman, though he claims not to be an expert. So, thank you. Enjoy the service.
For the chalice lighting, I invite you to join me in unison in reading number 502. Now is the accepted time, not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today is the seed time. Now are the hours of work, and tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. Now we'll sing hymn number 139. If you're able, please stand. Thank you.
the kids or anybody would like to come down for the story for all ages. Come and join me in the front. You are welcome to do so. So today our speaker is talking about transitions. Have you ever heard that word before? Transitions. Does anybody know what it means?
Going from one thing to the next.
Like it could be from going from one place to another, or sometimes we use it for going from one place in life to another, like one age to another, or can you think of another transition maybe? What is an example of a transition? How about like a birthday or something? Does anybody have a birthday? Did you have one last year? Are you going to have one? So when you have a birthday, what do you transition from? How old? From younger to older, or like how old are you? Does anybody want to say how old they are? How old are you? 7. And your next birthday, how old will you be? Will you ever be 7 again after you're 8? No. So some transitions change things forever. Some are maybe kind of good and we like them, and some are maybe hard. Can you think of a hard transition? Yeah, okay, maybe you don't necessarily want to go to school some days, or maybe you're going to go to a new school you've never been to before. It could be kind of scary. So some transitions we are in control of and we have choice about, and some we don't, right? So I'm going to tell you a story, and I like to have help. So this is Otis. This is a story about Otis and how he handled some transitions in his life, because some transitions happen even every day and we hardly notice them, like waking up in the morning. That's a transition from being asleep to being awake. You hardly pay attention to that kind of transition, but some get your attention a little bit more, right? So this is a story about Otis and the shooting star. So this is Otis, and he works at a garden center. That's why he wears this funny hat. And one night he had to work late because it was getting close to closing time, and the boss, the owner of the store, Mr. Garcia, came to Otis and he said, "You know, Otis, we just got a big shipment. A big truckload just came in, and you know, it's close to closing time, and we really need this truck unloaded by tomorrow because we're going to have a sale. And if we don't get the stuff unloaded, you know, we're not going to be all ready for the sale. So I really need you to stay late tonight because no one else can stay late. I can't stay late, you know, because Dancing with the Stars is on tonight. We all want to go home and watch it. And I know you don't watch it, so you probably won't mind staying late." And Otis was very polite, but inside he was thinking, "Geez, didn't these people ever hear video recorders? I have plans tonight too. Just because I don't watch TV doesn't mean that I want to stay late." But he was very polite, and he said, "Okay, Mr. Garcia." And Mr. Garcia said, "I trust you to lock up. Here's the key." So Otis had to unload the truck, big heavy bags of sand, and all the whole time he was doing it, he was getting madder and madder and madder. He's like, I had plans. I was going to ride my bike to the library, and now the library's going to be closed, and it's just going to be too dark, and it's just not fair. But he did the unloading, and he did all the work, and then he locked up, and he went out to wait for the bus. And while he was standing there waiting for the bus, he was just kind of daydreaming and looking up at the stars, and all of a sudden, he saw this really bright light in the sky. He started watching. It was really bright, like brighter than an airplane, and was going kind of slow at first, and then it kind of went whoosh, like that. It got brighter, and then it went down and disappeared. He's like, "Whoa, I think that was a falling star. That was really cool. Huh, well, I guess if I'd been home now and just sitting in my house reading or something, I wouldn't have even seen that. So maybe it's not so bad that, you know, and my grandma, you know, she says when you see a falling star, you should count your blessings." So I guess it was kind of a blessing. So he rode the bus home, and he got home, and he got off at the corner, and he's walking up home to his house, and he passed his friend Betty Lou's house. And Betty Lou was sitting out on her front porch. He said, "Hey, Betty Lou, guess what I saw?" Betty Lou said, "What?" "I saw this great shooting star, you know, because I had to stay late at work, which I was really mad about, but then I saw the shooting star, so it wasn't such a disaster after all that I had to stay late at work." And Betty Lou said, "Well, maybe it was a blessing, and maybe it was a disaster." "What do you mean?" And Betty Lou pointed over to his house. And in the light from the street lamp, he could see this kind of smoke rising up from behind his house. Like, "Oh no," he started to run. "I can't believe it." Guess what was in his backyard? It was this big, gigantic rock. "No, it can't be. It was the fallen star. It fell into his yard." Oh. And you know what was worse? Sticking out from underneath the rock, was he could see the wheel of his bike. And it was all smashed because he left his bike out in the yard. "Oh, you're right. It's a disaster. I can't believe it fell in my yard. I mean, this thing is like it's bigger than a minivan. It's bigger than my bedroom. A star fell in my yard." And you know what Betty Lou said? She said, "You know, actually the correct term is a meteorite. Just be quiet, Betty Lou." "This is a disaster." Betty Lou said, "Well, maybe it's a disaster. Maybe it's a blessing. Just, Betty Lou, you're confusing me. Go home." So he went in his house, and he went to bed, and he just couldn't sleep. He was tossing and turning. "Oh, why didn't I put my bike away in the garage like I should have? What am I going to do with this big rock in my backyard? It's going to be really hard to mow the lawn now." He just couldn't sleep. Oh, it's a disaster. Finally, he fell asleep, and then he woke up. Oh, you know, things always look a little bit better in the morning. And he went out, and he kind of looked out the window. Yep, I didn't dream it. It's still out there. And then he started thinking, well, you know, not everybody has a fallen star in their backyard. Maybe I could make something of this. So he got busy with some markers, and he started to make a poster, and he had this idea. So here's the poster that he made. Somebody want to read it? Can you read it?
$1.
So he made a whole bunch of these posters and he put them up all over town, and pretty soon people started coming over to his house to see the fallen star and get their picture taken with it and everything. And after a while, he counted up his money, and you know what? He had enough to buy a new bike. So that's pretty cool. And he called up Betty Lou on the phone. "Betty Lou, guess what? You're right. It was a blessing. I put up some posters and people came over and they paid to get their picture taken with the star, and I'm a huge success. You know, like, if this keeps up, I could quit my job at the garden center, and, you know, maybe I'll be famous." Guess what Betty Lou said? "Maybe it's a blessing. Maybe it's a disaster." "I don't get you, Betty Lou. How can it be a disaster?" Slam the phone down. Then there's a knock at the door. Somebody knocked at the door. He goes to answer the door, and there's this woman standing out there, and she has on a blue uniform and a badge and a big belt with a lot of stuff on it. And she holds up this poster and she says, "Sir, is this your poster?" Otis admits, "Yeah, I made it." He's like, "Sir, I'm here to inform you that it is illegal to post these types of things around town in public places. And not only that, I have a long list here of violations because you have been selling tickets to a public amusement without a permit, and the traffic in your neighborhood is a public nuisance." And, oh, he's like, "Oh my gosh, oh, it is a disaster. What am I going to do?" She said, "But instead of fining you, which we should do, is we're going to confiscate that meteorite. And we're going to take it away because the mayor thinks it's awfully selfish of you to keep it in your backyard when it could be enjoyed by the public in a public park. So we're taking it away." And she took out her radio. She's like, "Okay, move in the equipment." And a big bulldozer and a big backhoe and all kinds of big things with big wheels came in the yard and took the meteorite away. "Oh, my fallen star is gone, and now what do I have? A gigantic hole in my backyard. It's a huge crater. What am I going to do?" and Betty Lou had come over and was watching while the meteorite was being taken away. "Betty Lou, look at this hole." What do you think Betty Lou said? Maybe it's a disaster, maybe it's a blessing. "Oh, be quiet, Betty Lou, I've had enough of that. I wish you'd stop saying that." He went in the house and he slammed the door. And that night he couldn't sleep again, tossing and turning and tossing and turning. And finally he heard some rain on the roof. Started to tap, 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 tap. And after a while the rain kind of helped him fall asleep and kind of lulled him to sleep. Just like, "Oh, it's a disaster, this hole in my yard. What am I going to do? What am I going to do?" And then, you know, again, he woke up in the morning, felt a little better. The sun was shining. It wasn't raining anymore. And he pulled open his curtains and he looked outside. Oh, my gosh. What did he see? The hole was filled with water. Ah, hey, cool. It's like a swimming pool. I've always wanted a swimming pool. So he called up his friend, Betty Lou. And he said, "Betty Lou, you'll never guess what happened in the night. The crater filled up with water, and now I have a swimming hole." And just before you even say it, just don't even say it, because I know what you're going to say. And you know what? I get your point. It really doesn't matter what happens to us. What really matters is how we think about it. And it can always change. There's always more than one way to think about things. So why don't you just put your swimming suit on and come over and go swimming with me? So what do you think she did? Do you think she did it? She did. You're right. And that's her story. So now who is carrying the lantern today? Okay. And you can transition to Ari.
Service when we share our joys and concerns with each other. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring the microphone to you. If you please briefly tell us your name and the joy or concern you wish to share, then I will light a candle for you. I'm going to light the memorial candle today. Since yesterday was the third anniversary of the earthquake in Haiti, just kind of reminding ourselves that you know, in the immediate aftermath of these natural disasters, we often think about all the people who lost their lives. But years later, we tend not to think about all the people whose lives have been disrupted and are still disrupted, even though they're no longer in the news.
This is Chris. Would you please light a candle for one of our members, Randy Dorn, who had a heart attack a couple weeks ago? I spoke with him last night, and he's doing well and would like any thoughts and prayers sent his way.
Hi, this is Mark. I have a couple joys. Since October, I'm finally cast free, and a good friend of mine, Angel, for the first time since I've known her, she's going to go on a vacation to Florida for a week with a male friend of hers. So I think that's very exciting and happy for her. So,
my name is Lynn. So we're talking about transitions. I'd like a candle of joy for the transition our church will be going through as we call our first full-time minister. And really for the search committees, I'm sure lots of hours and thought and energy behind this, and everyone else is working towards that.
Hi, I'm Tom. Lori and I will be traveling to New Orleans next week for a short-term service, social service trip there. And it's been 8 years since the flood, just to touch point there. We're looking forward to that, so a candle of joy.
I'd like to light a candle of joy for my new nephew, who's 3 weeks old, and also a candle of joy that my sister came with me today.
I'm Janice. A candle of concern for my brother, Fred, who has a serious cancer, and for all of our family.
Let us now be in a time of quiet, reflection, meditation, and prayer. I invite you into silence that I will punctuate only with a few phrases. Let us be in gratitude for those persons and circumstances which have brought us to this moment. Let us be in awe of our presence in this now. Let us reflect on all that we hold in common with one another and with all sentient beings. Let us be encouraged to just be in this time without any other purpose except to discover what may unfold. Let us renew our commitments to be persons of compassion. Be that we can be nourished and refreshed in this time of quiet. Amen. I invite you, if you're able, to stand and we'll sing the two verses of hymn number 209. Thank you.
when Dan Brown wrote the Da Vinci Code, he popularized what scholars have known for a long time, and that is that there were many documents about Jesus written in the first three centuries, way more than just the four Gospels that we have come to know in the Bible. And that during those three centuries, the church made a decision to eliminate those other than the four that are found in the Bible because they were judged to be heretical. Lately, there's been a lot of interest in these documents, and as you'll hear in a moment, particularly on the part of feminist theologians, they just invite us into a different way of seeing things in the first century. So I invite you, the Gospel of Thomas is one of those, and it consists of 100 aphorisms that are attributed to Jesus, and I will just read a few of them. The translation is by Thomas Lambden. Jesus said, "The man or woman, old in days, will not hesitate to ask a small child 7 days old about the place of life, and he or she will live." Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you. For there is nothing hidden which will not become manifest." Jesus saw infants being suckled. He said to his disciples, "These infants being suckled are like those who enter the kingdom." And they said to him, "Shall we then as children enter the kingdom?" Jesus said to them, "When you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, then you will enter the kingdom." Jesus said, "That which you have within you will save you if you bring it forth from yourselves." Second reading today is from a book by Richard Rohr called Falling Upward. Once you have faced your own hidden or denied self, there is not much to be anxious about anymore, because there is no fear of exposure to yourself or others. The game is over, and you are free. You have now become the holy fool of legend and story. You are finally who you are and can be who you are without disguise or fear. I had a very interesting moment when Barbara walked off with my sermon. I don't know if you were trying to say something or not. I do thank you for the honor of being asked to share with you this morning. And let me begin just with a disclaimer. I have just returned from Florida, where my sister and I placed my father into hospice care. And that's obviously a major life transition, so what I'm having to say this morning is fairly close to the bone. So if I have a little catch of voice, I hope you'll allow me that. Would you please raise your hands if your life up until this point has turned out exactly as you planned or expected? As John Lennon put it, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. Well, I turned 70 this last summer. I have no idea how this happened. And apart from some peculiar ailments, I feel fine, and I certainly don't feel old. Being old is what happens to other people after they turn 70. But I have to admit, the 70th decade is a little different. It was quite easy to say 40 and sporty, and 50 and nifty, and even 60 and spiffy. But the number 70 seems to have a little more gravitas about it. And I also have to admit that turning 70 forces one to face some very hard truths. For example, I now know that I will never have that six-pack of abs I've always dreamed about. I also know that despite my mother's totally unrealistic expectations, I will never become dean of the Harvard Divinity School. I also now know that I have a finite number of casts left to cast flies to a beautiful trout in the streams of southwest Wisconsin. Or, to put this another way, I now know that in the form of myself with whom I've become familiar, I had a beginning and I will have an end. So I welcome myself and all of you to the certainty that we are finite and limited. Even more than that, I invite you into the insight that we are in constant change. As Heraclitus put it over 3,000 years ago, you cannot step into the same river twice. All is in flux. All is changing. Just when we think we've got something figured out, our circumstances change. How many of you, like me, dread that email from the IT department saying, we are pleased to announce a new upgrade of the system? No, please, don't change it. I'm only now figuring it out. We are always in transition, always moving from A to B, or more likely from A to C or A to D. So what shall we do with our transitions? What do they signify? And how can we move through our transitions with some gracefulness and some gratitude? As I've been ruminating on these questions of transition since my 70th birthday, my wife Jean recommended that I read Richard Rohr's Falling Upward, A Spirituality for the Two Halves of Life. And some of the points I'd like to make this morning are inspired by Rohr's book. While you may or may not be comfortable with Rohr's theological grounding, he has written this book in such a way that you can easily ignore his theology and still find the wisdom that he has to give us, whether from a humanist perspective or from any other spiritual angle. So I do think this book is very helpful. As we think about our transitions, the obvious thing first is that none of us moves from point A to B exactly as we plan. Life happens. Despite our current culture of day planners and checklists, ultimately, life cannot be controlled anywhere near to the extent that we think it can. Despite our best efforts, things go wrong. Despite our best intentions, stuff happens. What shall we do with this obvious truth? So many wise spiritual guides have given us the advice of Vietnamese Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh, which is simply to be here now. This is the only moment we have. What a shame to waste this precious moment worrying about the past, which is gone, or about the future, which is not yet here. Henry David Thoreau described our lives as the meeting of two eternities, the past and the future, which is precisely this moment. And he taught that we must try to toe this line. A second lesson that I see as relevant to approaching our life transitions is to try to understand whether we're 20 and just beginning adult life, or whether we are 80, trying to understand that in any transitions, what we need to grasp is that you and I are human beings, not human doings. Our culture, of course, shouts exactly the opposite at us. Nearly everything in our culture seduces us into thinking that our value and status is in terms of what we do or what we have and not who we are. 9 times out of 10, when someone is asked about him or herself, that person will answer by describing what they do. But our doings will cease. And as they do, will we have learned how to be? Back in September, I made a decision to tell my department chairpersons that I would not accept any further teaching assignments beginning in 2013. This was a terrifying decision to make. It feels like I'm jumping off the diving board without knowing if there's any water in the pool or not. But something quite deep in my spirit has called me to make this decision in order to discover some wisdom that may unfold by creating a place that is empty, a space. We are so often afraid of emptiness or apparent void that we fill our lives with all these doings to try and take care of our anxiety, and that, unfortunately, is to the exclusion of learning how to be. Would it not make sense, as Thoreau taught, to befriend ourselves, to take some time to actually get to know maybe one of the most interesting persons you will ever know, and that is yourself? A third lesson that I see in transitions is that we are each stories. You and I are stories, and we are in the process of writing them. I come to this affirmation from a belief system that holds that all of our stories are sacred, that there is some reflection of the divine in the stories that we choose to tell through our lives. Traditional religious language puts it that God has a purpose for each of us. We are each given the assignment, I think. Figure out, what does it mean to be a human being? And I think that's the most important assignment we are ever given and moves us to write the most important story that we will ever write. And the great part about this assignment is this. In the immortal aphorism of Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. Or even better expressed in the recent film, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. In this delightful film, the main character keeps repeating, as everything goes wrong, keeps repeating in his wonderful lilting Indian accent, "It'll all be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end." So I encourage myself and I encourage you to take heart. We're still writing our stories. And I believe there is every possibility that we may well amaze ourselves, and even more important, end up profoundly grateful for what our lives eventually turn out to be. A fourth lesson that I find in our life transitions is the challenge of accepting ambiguity. In What Matters Most, psychologist James Hollis writes that this may be the most important life skill ever learned. How to live with ambiguity. How to tolerate ambiguity. In parallel fashion, Parker Palmer in Healing the Heart of Democracy identifies an ability to hold tension in life-giving ways as an absolutely critical component of the process of having authentic political values discussion. So whether we think of it inwardly or outwardly, this challenge of holding ambiguity is incredibly important. We are invited to accept ambiguity in response to the temptation of claiming certainty. Dogmatic certainty shuts down conversation. It shuts down thinking, and I think it also shuts down that creative part of ourselves that calls us to a richer life. As you consider your life stories, ask yourself if the transitions which turned out long-term to have been most edifying in your life were not also the scariest changes that you made. Precisely because you did not know what the change would bring. Moving through such ambiguity is hard and often painful, but as our coaches tell us, no pain, no gain. A fifth, and at least for today, last lesson that I find in considering our life transitions is to trust that we already have within ourselves that which we need. Many years ago, when our son graduated from high school, he and I went together on a backpacking trip into the Beartooth Mountains of Montana, seeking cutthroat trout. In preparation for that trip, I spent a couple of months walking through our neighborhood with a knapsack filled with 40 pounds of bricks in order to try and condition myself. When it came to packing our backpack, our guide advised us to make sure that it would weigh no more than 40 pounds. Well, knowing the temperature of those high mountain streams, one of the most important decisions that we had to make was whether or not to carry with us our chest waders, heavy rubber chest waders. In the end, we chose to take them in spite of their weight. Well, the adventure turned out to be way more of an adventure than we had counted on. In the first 3 days, the weather was glorious, and all the time as I was trudging uphill, I kept thinking, why in the world am I carrying these heavy waders? And then on the fourth day of the trip, at 12,000 feet, I discovered the answer to this question. And it was not the answer I expected. On the fourth day, we were caught in a blizzard. This is August. I will never forget the scene of snow flying horizontally in the wind, and our guide, as we're trying to put up our tents to get out of it, and our guide standing there with this Buddha-like, beatific look on his face saying, oh, this is intense. In this extreme weather, we were very happy to put on our waders, not to fish, but just as another layer of insulation against the cold. Well, when I told this adventure to a friend who happened to be a therapist, she said, you know, there's a very obvious lesson here, and it is that we always have what we need, even if it doesn't feel like it, and even if we use it for what we did not expect. We carry with us what we need. In the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas, Jesus is purported to have said, that which you have within you will save you if you bring it forth. So here's our challenge. Trust yourself that you already have what you need for the journey. Trust yourself to move into ambiguity, knowing that that is the fertile soil for authentic growth. Trust yourself that you don't have to know, and in fact you cannot know, what is going to occur. Befriend and nurture yourself, and know that the crucial junctures of our lives will more than likely not move seamlessly from A to B, but more than likely move lurchingly from A to C or to D. So continue writing your story. I believe that the story you write will be incredibly important. Indeed, I believe that it will be sacred. I conclude again with the words of Richard Rohr. Once you have faced your own hidden or denied self, there is not much to be anxious about anymore, because there is no fear of exposure to yourself or to others. The game's over. And you are free. You are finally who you are and can be who you are without disguise or fear. Or, in the words of the hotel proprietor, it'll all be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end.
Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. We have time for a polylog, and that's the time in our service when we can share your insights and reflections on this morning's talk. If you would like to make a comment, you can raise your hand and the usher will bring the microphone. Please state your name. And then the speaker, Howard, will also be available after the service. And the coffee. Do you want to stay for coffee, Howard? In case you want to talk to him during the social time as well.
Hi, this is Kaz. I'm very thankful for the message. This transition is so uncertain sometimes, and that and it's painful sometimes. And you think the life has so much more control over yours, and then you realize that, hey, you really don't have that control. And then all the things that you did in your life, controlling and doing better and, you know, contributing to society, and then all that just kind of, for the moment, it leaves you, and you're faced with not doing, but being. It's so much frightened sometimes than it's doing, okay? And when the doing ceases, and then you're faced with being, and then somehow trusting that the road ahead of being, it's going to be okay. Thank you.
I'm Chris, and I also want to thank you for your talk today. I wish we had all afternoon to discuss it because you brought up so many really, really powerful things. And actually, we were in bed this morning having our coffee and talking about exactly the things you mentioned. So I just want to thank you for that. But I also want to share quickly that I had a little conversation with my daughter to describe fly fishing because she thought that you could actually fish for flies. And so you may have to explain that to her again later.
Thank you, Howard, too. And as I think through the difficult times that transitions can be, I think it's helpful, your message, to just be instead of doing. But I feel like you have to do to be sometimes. Like, doing the things that keep you in the moment would be like, you know, mindfulness and meditation or exercise or, you know, whatever. Just to remind yourself to be in the moment and do the things that help you in the moment.
Yeah, all the comments are really profound. I would agree that there are two kinds of doing. There's the nervous doing, which is trying to escape being in the moment, and then there's intentional doing to be in the moment, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Hi, this is John, and I also enjoyed very much your thoughts, and it seems through my life, the decade of being old has always been about 10 years beyond where I am, and it just continues along.
My name's Dave. As an art teacher, I was listening to you speak today, I started reflecting on the parallel between what you're talking about, transitions in life and that sort of thing, and really the creative process. And I find my students often kind of frozen and unable to kind of move forward, and, you know, afraid of the unknown, what might be coming next. And it's always a struggle to get them to just, well, do something. and continue working and trust that something will come of this, but only if you continue moving forward with it. If you just sit there thinking about it forever, nothing's ever going to happen. But just kind of moving forward. And I was kind of, I think that metaphor will stick with me, you know, because not only the creative process, but, you know, this creative process that we call life as well. Each person, personal.
I'm Yvonne, and I think there's a tendency to think, when we say be, I think we think it's thinking. And to me, there's that the doing part is action, and there's an old phrase, you're a do-be. You have to be both. And, you know, my mother, so I think when there's an anxious moment, there's an emotional, energetic element, and to be able to come to calm, I think you have to sometimes release that energy. My mother's advice was always, if you're feeling bad, scrub the kitchen floor. And, you know, somehow it releases that, some of that tension and anxiety, so that you can be, I can be then more able to be. But I think there, you know, being, often people think it's just sitting there, and I think there it's more complex than that. And the idea is to bring you back to love, that trust is that there is love all around you, and it's often not hard, not easy to see, but the idea is to experience it, not just think it.
Thanks. Mark? Yeah, thanks, Yvonne, because that, I mean, you couldn't have said it better, because I really like doobies, and but I think that's key, right? I think it isn't just sitting there meditating, right? I mean, it's often, I think I get criticized sometimes about this church that, what do you really stand for? It's just a social gathering. But social is so important. We are inherently all connected, and we sit alone, and our thoughts are negative. I mean, I think sometimes we just need to get out and do, even if it's not purposeful, but just to be with one another and let whatever happens, or do a project together, or do art together, or whatever. So, doing is a key part of being.
Al here. Thinking that the answer is just to be simple and to be present in the one. It's unfair to call that simple. And I was thinking about how one can quiet the mind and spirit to get that mindful stage of just being, and understand from the cleaning of the floor how activity can free you from perhaps the mind getting in the way. But thinking further, that we really need all of us to put in practice, even if it's a minute, to just force ourselves perhaps to learn that simplifying discipline, and perhaps more especially so now with the inability to be separate from whether it's your work or connection through electronics or what have you. And I think perhaps I'm not at your, how shall I put this, not age, level of experience. But I think about the youth and how there's such a huge pride and practice in multitasking, and wonder how that also conflicts to the ability of a singular presence, if you will.
I'm Rick. Thank you very much. I'm a financial planner, and I have several emails I have to answer this afternoon with clients in transition. And a lot of them have gray hair or no hair, and they're still facing these transitions, and they're petrified, absolutely petrified, because their source of income has changed. And I don't know how I'm going to answer those emails this afternoon, but thank you very much for tools that I didn't have an hour ago. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barb. I think we have
might tend to want to have this notion that being means we're going to feel peaceful and groovy. And for me, that doesn't happen very often. So, and I've really been turning this over a lot in my mind lately. So, being is being whatever, wherever we are, for me.
We can continue the conversation during the social hour. Now's the time for our offering. And we come to this place because we love what exists here. This church is a living entity, and like all living beings, it must have nurture and sustenance. Its breath and its heartbeat, its life itself, can only be derived from its living components, us. The offering will now be received. Please open your hymnals to the reading number 646. Join me. I will read the bold or the non-italic, the larger circle. We clasp the hands of those that go before us. We enter the little circle of each other's arms. And the larger circle of all creatures. To a music so subtle and vast that no ear ever hears it. And for our closing hymn, please rise as you're willing and able and sing closing hymn is number 322. Thank you.
Let us go with courage to continue our journeys, continue writing our stories. Let us go with openness as to what will unfold if we let it. Let us go with hope that we may yet amaze ourselves. And let's try to remember that it'll be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end.